Okay, we're starting here at the bottom of Gimel and Bet. The Gemara had run into a problem because we had a statement yesterday from Rav Chista which says, Lo shanu ela lemalchei Yisrael, alemalchei umot ha'olam mitishrei maninan. We say that it's Rosh Hashanah l'malachim is on Nisan, that's only for the Jewish kings, but not for the non-Jewish kings. And the Gemara brought a proof to that from Nehemiah. Rav Yosef challenged that and said, well, from Haggai it doesn't sound that way, because in Haggai's Nevuah, he has a Nevuah on Vesrim Arbada Chodesh Bashishi in the sixth month, which is Elul. And then Bishvi'i, he has another Nevuah, and the Navi does not change the year. It doesn't indicate that there was any crossover of the year. Shvi'i is Tishrei. There you have Elul and Tishrei, you have a crossover on Tishrei, and yet we don't see the rain year change on Tishrei. Rav Yosef challenged him. Rabbi Abahu suggested that Koresh Melech Kasher Haya. Koresh was a Kasher Melech, and therefore they were Muneh for him Al Pi Malchei Yisrael, the way that Malchei Yisrael do it by Rosh Chodesh Nisan as being Rosh Hashanah Limelachim. So then Rav Yosef challenged that from two points. Number one is he challenged it from the fact that the Pesukim in Haggai are speaking about Daryovish, and you're telling me that Koresh is a kosher king. Number two is, in Ezra, we have the Psukim in Ezra which say that Bidnian Habayit was finished in the sixth year of Daryovish. And then it says afterwards that Ezra made Aliyah, or brings the Aliyah, in the seventh year of the king. But that was already a year later. It was after Nisan. And so if that was the case, why isn't it the eighth year of Daryovish and not the seventh year of Daryovish? So that's where we left off. The Gemara's answer was, Tanu hu Koresh hu Daryovish hu Artakshasta, that all three of the kings were the same individual. And therefore, when you say Koresh is Melech Kasher Haya, that applies to Daryovish as well. What about the problem from the Psukim in Ezra that seemed to indicate that there was no crossover? In the sixth year of Daryovish, we had the Binyan Abayit, and then in the seventh year, Ezra goes up to Eretz Yisrael, leaving on Rosh Chodesh Nisan, which would have meant he crossed over Nisan. It should have already been the eighth year when Ezra leaves. Mar's answer is, Amrav Yitzchak Lokasha, Kandam Kodem Sheikh Mitz, Kana Achar Sheikh Mitz. That's while Daryovish was still positively disposed to the Jews and granted them permission to build. Whereas that after that, he changed his mind, or he was less favorably disposed towards the Jews, and therefore they changed the way that they viewed him, and they started to count his years from Tishrei and not from Nisan. That was the conclusion of the Gemara. What's interesting in Sefer Ezra is, and we'll see this today, it's going to be relevant to today's daf, which is that there are three letters that are written. There's a letter by Koresh, which permits them to begin the Binyan HaMikdash, which is when Zerubbabel goes up and they begin the Binyan HaBayit. Then you have the interruption of the building because of the letters from the Eretz Yehuda by those people that were trying to stop the Jews, saying that they're rebelling against the king, and that was that they katav sitna. They wrote the sitna b'zman achashverosh. They stopped the building. Then, in the time of Daryovish, they start. Right, there was nachtashta where it stopped, but then the Navi also mentions that in the time of Achashverosh katav sitna. It's not clear when the building stopped. Seems like it's even earlier than Achashverosh's time, but it seems that to me that Achashverosh was a party to it or continued that policy because of the Sidna. And then Chazal picked up on that and said that that was what was going on with Achashverosh. Then the beginning of his reign, if you look in the Targum, that he had stopped the Binyan HaBayit. Then Daryovish gives permission to the Jews to continue the building, but that's only after he gets a letter from Yehuda trying to stop the people there from continuing the building of the Mikdash. And they, Jews there, convinced them to send a letter to Daryovish to ask him about this. So they send a letter to Daryovish, and in that letter, the Jews claim that there's a letter from Koresh that says that they have permission to build here. So Daryovish sends the people to look in the Otsar HaMelech, in the treasuries, to see if they can find this, and they find the document that has the command that allows them to build a Pi Koresh. They have that letter. Then Daryovish issues a new letter, which basically affirms what Koresh had said and allows them to continue the building of the Mikdash and to finish off the Mikdash. That happens or is completed in the sixth year of Daryovish. It happens in the second year of Daryovish. They send a letter, and then he makes the command, and they finish in the sixth year of Daryovish. Then Ezra makes Aliyah. There it says it's the seventh year. But when it says it's the seventh year, the Navi all of a sudden flips over and says that it's Archartashast, that is the king. So already over there, even according to Rav Yosef, you have to say that Daryovish and Archartashast were one king, because he brings a proof from Ezra that in the sixth year they finished the Binyan Abayit, which is the sixth year of Daryovish, and then the seventh year, which is under the rule of Archartashast, Ezra makes Aliyah. You have in Ezra, it switches from the sixth year, and then it goes into the seventh year, and all of a sudden it's a new king, it's Archartashast, but the Navi makes it as if there's a continuum. It's the sixth year, seventh year, as if there was no change. So it's the same king. So even according to Rav Yosef, he has to agree to the Braita that it was Ukoreshu Doyovesh Urtashast, because his proof is brought in from the fact there. There's an additional letter, there's a third letter that's written by Archartashast, which grants Ezra permission to gather all the people and to take them up to Yerushalayim, and gives him basically authority to ensure that the people leave with him from Bavel and go up to Eretz Yisrael. So those are the three letters. So now the Gemara claims here that Koresh, who is Daryovish, went off to Derech at some point, and that's why at one point they count his years according to Tishrei, and one time they count his years according to Nisan. When he was kosher, they counted according to Nisan. When things didn't go so well, they counted according to Tishrei. So the Gemara says, Matin Flar of Kana, Umi Yechmit. What do you mean Daryovish went off the Derech? Vaktiv. Doesn't it say in Ezra, this is the letter issued by your Daryovish. After they confirm and they find the letter of Koresh, then he writes his own letter, and he writes to send the goods to the people there. He says, Uma Chashchan, and whatever they require, Ubnei Torin, young bulls, Dichrin, rams, Ayo, Vimrin, and sheep, La'alavan, La'luka, Shmaya, to be olot to the God of Heavens, Chintin, chita, melach, salt, chamar, wine, umeshach, and oil, kimemar kanaya de Yerushalayim, then on the P, the word of those Kohanim that are in Yerushalayim, they have a mityahev lahem, yom biyom, it should be given to them or granted to them day by day, zila shalu, without fail. So as part of the letter that Daryovish grants them in going up to Yerushalayim, Daryovish there says that they have permission, first of all, to build. And number two is, he gives them out of the royal treasures, he insists that from the taxation that they collect in those areas, that they should give them the means to provide the korbanot, the means to build, and as well as the means to provide the korbanot. So you see over here that he is very generous over here, and generous in the way that he is allowing them to bring korbanot to Hashem. So bringing korbanot to Hashem, he is obviously not gone off the derech. So how can you claim here that you have a new dating system for him that is based on Tishrei because he went off the derech? Look at the letter that he's writing in exactly the time you're claiming that he's going to go off the derech over here. It's just not true. Amar lo Rabbi Yitzchak. Rabbi Yitzchak, who was the one who gave the answer, he says, Mitunach. I'll prove it to you from the same psukim. You want to bring those psukim? Look at the continuation of those psukim. Why is he granting all this generosity to the Jews to provide for the korbanot in the Mikdash? He says why. D. Lehevon mehakrivin nichochin lelukash maya, in order that they can bring the nichoach, they can bring those pleasant things before the God of Heavens. Umitzalain lechayei malka uvnohi, in order that he should grant long life or protect the life of the king and his children. So he has a vested interest in seeing them do the performance of the avoda, because he thinks through that performance of the avoda that he's going to be the beneficiary with a long life and his children's long life. So Mar says, "Man David hachi bab mal yutohi." What's wrong with doing that? What's wrong with doing a mitzvah with the condition that you should have some benefit from it? Vatanya. We have a braita, Omer Sela Zulit Staka, Bishvil Shechyu Banai. First, he gives Staka on the condition that his children should live. Or Bishvil Shechke Ba Lechaye Olam Abba. Or, in order that I should gain Olam Abba. Harizet Tzadik Gamur. First, is a complete Tzadik. My says, Lokasha. Kan Bisrael. Kan Be'ovdei Kochavim. It's a difference between a Jew and a non-Jew. So here, Rashi explains to us what's the difference. Kan Bisrael. Shlibo l'shamayim, because his heart is to heaven. V'mirim lo b'chayav, enu kore lo tagar. And if he doesn't get it, I mean, if his prayers are not answered, he doesn't then question God. No, he just assumes that he did something wrong to lose that credit. If he doesn't get his prayers answered, then he thinks that God is just not just, or he's not giving him what he's supposed to give. He had the same distinction drawn in the Tefillah of Shlomo. When they consecrate the Mikdash in Tefillah Shlomo there, he says that everybody's prayers could come towards this Mikdash and go up to heaven. And he just makes a distinction between the prayers of the Jews and the prayers of the non-Jews. And the prayers of the Jews should be answered, but the prayers of the non-Jews, he said, will be granted. And when Gemara Er asks the same question, why is there a difference in the way that he approaches the receipt or the acceptance of the prayers of the Jews versus the non-Jews? And his answer is similar to here, which is that a Jew has that understanding versus the non-Jew. The third time that we have this is by the Birkat Yitzchak. When Yitzchak gives the brachot to Esav and to Yaakov, by Yaakov, he makes his brachot conditional on his behavior and what he's going to do, whereas Esav's brachot are given without any condition. And again, Chazal over there brings Tfilat Shlomo as evidence to the fact that there's a difference between a Yisrael and an Oved Kochavim, that Yisrael will not be Koret Tagar if his tfilot are not answered, whereas the Oved Kochavim will. So that's why even when he did it over here, that is not considered to be a tzaddikah more, because by an Oved Kochavim, that's considered to be an ulterior motive. And he won't assume if it doesn't come true that there's something wrong with God, or God didn't do what he was supposed to do. For a Jew, when he says it, even if it doesn't come true, he'll blame himself rather than God. By a Jew, he's considered to be a tzaddik gamur. By a non-Jew, by an Oved Kochavim, then that's considered to be an ulterior motive that detracts from the mitzvah and actually makes it into something that's not classified as being positive necessarily. Then, based on that, Tosafot says that the Mishnah in Avot that says, "Al tu yukavadim mishamshim et rabam unat kabel pras," hainu b'umot olam. That's referring to Umot Olam, Shatoim al Rishonot, which is an unbelievable explanation of that Mishnah, that is referring to Ovdei Kochavim and not to Jews. Obviously, there are others who interpret it differently, but Tosafot says, based on our Gemara, that that's referencing the Ovdei Kochavim. Vibay Zema, some say, Minolan Da'achmitz, that wasn't the source for the fact that he went off the Derech. Rather, Dichtiv, it says, Nidbachin Di'evin Gilau, Tlata v'nidbach di'achadat v'nifkita min bayit malka tichahav. He says you should take, for building materials, you should have Evan Galal, which is marble, Tlato, three rows of marble, v'nidbach di'achadat, one row of new wood, v'nifkita, the expenses, min bayit malka tichahav, should come out of the house of the king, from the royal treasury. Lamalei David Hochi. Why did he have them build that way? Why did he have them build three rows marble, one row wood, three rows marble, one row wood? Savar, imerdu bi Yudai, says, if the Jews rebel against me, ikalai binuram, I'll set it on fire. Since structurally the wood is fundamental to the structure, the integrity of the structure, if you light it on fire, it'll collapse. So he says, if they rebel against me, it won't be a stone wall that I can't breach, but rather it'll be a wall that I'll just light on fire, and then I can destroy the Mikdash. But it says, Atu Shlomo lo avad hochi. Didn't Shlomo build in the same manner? Vaktiv, it says, by Shlomo melech, the melechim aleph, Shlosha turei gazit. It says, Chatzera pnimit, it says, Shlosha turei gazit. Three rows of hewn stone. Vitur krutot arazim. And one row of cut beams of cedar. So, Gemara distinguished. Is Shlomo avad milamalo? Viu avad milamato. Shlomo put the wood on top, whereas Daryovish had them put the wood at the bottom. So it would be a base or part of the foundation. So if you burnt it, the wall would collapse. As opposed to Shlomo, when it's on top, it would not cause the wall to collapse. Shlomo shak'e bibinyana. Shlomo submerged it in the building. He did not submerge it in the building. Shlomo sadye besida. Shlomo plastered it with plaster. He did not plaster it with plaster. So Shlomo HaMelech is wrapped in plaster so it won't catch fire. Can't light it on fire. Whereas his was exposed. So therefore, the Gemara says that might be the evidence to the fact that he was not exactly the benevolent king that we think, because look at these precautions he was taking against the Jews. Rav Yosef, Itema Rav Yitzchak, Minalan Diachmitz. We have another option of Amar Rav Yosef, Itema Rav Yitzchak, how do we know he went off to the Derech? Miochel. Because of the pasuk in Nehemiah that we mentioned yesterday, which is Vayomer li Hamelech Vashegal Yoshevet Etzlo, that the king said to me, and the queen was at his side. My Shegal, the Gemara says Shegal here is not a queen, but rather Amar Rabba Bar Lema Mishmei Derav Kalbata. It was a dog. The Shegal was a dog. He was engaged in bestiality, which is a sur for Bnei Noach. It says, if that's what you say that the word Shegal means, you're going to have a problem explaining some psukim in Tanakh. The first of which is in Daniel, Haktiv. Says Daniel, Ve'al marash maya hitromamta. You've exalted yourself above the heavens, meaning above the owner of heavens, meaning above God. L'manaya divete haitiv kadamach. And the kelim, the utensils from his house, you have brought before you. I mean, the clay amigdash you are using. He's speaking to the king of Bavel at this point. Va'ant, v'rav rivanach, you and your nobles, sheglatach, your consorts, or the queen, ulechenatach, and your concubines, chamra shatayin behon. You drink from them wine. Here, Daniel is criticizing the king for what he's done wrong here. He's taken the clay amigdash, made them his own, and now he drinks wine along with all these individuals in these kelim. Vi shegal kabuto, if shegal means a dog, kabuto bat mishtaya chamrahi, since when do dogs drink wine? Halokasho, that's not a problem. De melafala, you can teach it, you can teach a dog to do anything, vishatyo, and then it drinks. Taught it how to drink wine, and it drinks wine. So that's the answer in Daniel. Alameato, what about the psukim in Tehillim, Dichtiv? Says there about Melech HaMashiach, that the honor of Melech HaMashiach will be such that Benot Melachim B'yikru Techa, that the princesses will be amongst your visitors. Nitzva Shegal Yemincha, the Shegal will stand to your right, stand erect to your right. B'ketem Ophir, bedecked in golden jewels of Ophir. But here it says, Nitzva Shegal Yemincha, that the queen is standing next to you, which would be an indication of the honor granted to Mashiach. But V'Shegal Kalbatoi, if you say it's a dog, Maika Mivaseluhu Novili Yisrael. What good news is he telling them? Achi Kamar, Bishar Shechaviva Torah Yisrael Kishegal Lovdei Kochavim. Because of the scar of the love that Bnei Yisrael has for the Torah, similar to the love the Ovid Kochavim has to the Kalba, to the dog, Zichitim the Ketem Ophir. You therefore merited the Ketem Ophir. So it's a mashal rather than being literal. And that's how they get out of the problem with Shegal. Obviously, this is all a drasha, because in Pashtut the Pasuk, if you say Shegal is the queen, it makes sense in all of the three contexts. V'ivaitema, the olam Shegal Malkutohi, en ochanami. Shegal is a queen, and that's the proper way to read it. V'rabba barlema gemara gemirilo. That was a mesora that he had a relationship with the dog, that there was bestiality. He didn't prove it from the pasuk, he had the mesora. But my karila shegal. So then why do you call it a shegal? Shaita chaviv alav kishegal. It was beloved to him like a queen. So he agrees that the word shegal means queen. But he had a mesora that the queen by Daryovish was not exactly a queen. It was his beloved dog. Inami, shoshiva mimkom shegal. Or the other possibility is that the dog sat on the throne like the queen would sit on the throne. So it acted like a queen in that way. Ibaitema, minolan de achmitz. Here's another possibility how we know that he went off to derech mihocha. Because it says in Ezra Zion, again, in Ezra Zion, this is the command to send the stuff with the people up to Yerushalayim. It says, what can you send? Ad kisaf kakrin. You can send them with silver talents, me'ah, up to 100 talents. Vad chintin korin me'ah. And up to 100 pur of chita, vad chamar batin me'ah, and 100 batin, a bat and a kur, the Gemara discusses in other places, what's the relationship between them, but it's in 100 baths worth of wine, va'ad batin mishach me'ah, and up to 100 bat of oil, umalach dila kitav, and unlimited salt. So Gemara says, mi'kara, in the first time when they wrote and they granted him to take things up to Yerushalayim, it says, "Velo kitzuta." There was no limit. If you look at the pasuk at the top of the Amud, for Ezra Vav, over there he grants him all of these items. Melach, Hamar, Meshach, Kemarmar, Kanaya, Dib Yerushalayim. Whatever they need, whatever they say they need, you can have. Over here, he gives them a quantitative limit to how much. Ma'av this, 100 this, 100 this, 100 of this. So there is a limit. So that's what changed. And over here, it's done with a limit. Gemara says, "V'dilma mikara lo avakimle b'kitzuta." So maybe in the beginning he didn't know how much they needed. That's when he sent them up the first time. He said, "Well, the Kohanim will tell you." Once they established how much they needed, then later in Ezra Zion, where again this is another letter in Ezra Zion, this is with Achartashast. When he says Ezra up with the letter, there he says to them that they should provide for what they need. But there, he gives a limit. Maybe now they already know. After they've had the Mikdash up and running, they know how much they need. Ela mechavarta kideshaninan mikara. Makes more sense to use some of the other reasons as to why he went off the derech. So over here we had a number of proofs to the fact that he went off the derech. One was that he granted them items to use, but they were for his own benefit. Number two is that he asked them to build with wood in the middle so that he could take down the Mikdash. Number three was that he had a relationship with the dog, with the Shegal being the Kalbata. Number four was the possibility that he changed his mind about being generous and giving them unlimited supplies to limiting their supplies. Gemara says that that may not be the case, just may be that he had more information the second time versus the first time. And again, we said that Rav Yosef must also hold of the Braita that Koresh, Dayavish, and Achashtast are same individual, because otherwise his proof from Ezra doesn't stand. And all these quotes that we're bringing here, assuming that the continuation of Ezra, even though the name of the king changed, is the same individual. Based on that, we learned that, number one, the Jewish kings have Nisan as their Rosh Hashanah. Non-Jewish kings have Tishrei as their Rosh Hashanah. And the only exception to that rule was Koresh, which was really Daryovesh. And that exception is because he was the facilitator of the Binyan HaMikdash, and therefore they called him a kasher, and they counted him like Nisan, at least for the early part of his life. Later on, when he changed his mind, or for whatever reason here, he was less favorably disposed to the Jews, then they changed it back to counting him from Tishrei instead of Nisan. Okay, now the Gemara moves on to Ulu Rigalim. We said in the Mishnah that Rosh Chodesh Nisan is the Rosh Hashanah Ulu Rigalim. So Gemara says, Regalim b'echad minisanu v'chamishasar minisanu. Why does the Regalim have anything to do with Rosh Chodesh Nisan? The first Regal, if you want to even say that, is the 15th of the month. It's the 15th of Nisan is when Pesach comes out. What does the first of Nisan have to do with the Regalim? So Rav Chista, Regal Shubo, Rosh Hashanah the Regalim, the month in which Pesach is found, which is Rosh Hashanah the Regalim, starts with Aleph Nisan. So that's what it means in terms of Rosh Hashanah. Shabbat Rosh Hashanah the Regalim, it means in that month of Nisan, it contains the Rosh Hashanah the Regalim. Nafkamina. Why does it matter when the Rosh Hashanah for Regalim is? Why does it matter that Chag HaPesach is first, then Chag HaShavuot, and then Chag HaSukkot? Now, it's true from the description of the Torah that is the natural course of events, because the agricultural events that are associated with each of these holidays are in that order. That Pesach is Chag Aviv, Shavuot is Chag HaKatzir, and Sukkot is Chag HaAsif, which is the order in which you would plant, harvest, and then gather it in from the fields. So that would indicate that that is the order. But the Gemara is saying here that that order starts with Rosh Hashanah being Echad B'Nisan. So now what nafkamina does that have? Lo noder. Someone takes a neder. When someone takes a neder to give something to the Mikdash or to Hashem, then the Mekim Alei B'Bal Ta'acher. When does the Isur of tearing or delaying in fulfilling your vow come into effect? Rabbi Shimon, and it's according to the sheet of Rabbi Shimon, the Tanya. Echad noder, ve'echad magdish, ve'echad marich. One who takes a neder, again, to bring a korban to Hashem. One who's magdish, who consecrates something to the Mikdash. Ve'echad marich, and someone who gives erech, who says he's going to give the value of a so-and-so to the Mikdash, but that value is determined by the tables at the end of Sefer Vayikra, this week's parsha. Kevin shavru alav gimo regalim. Once three regalim have passed, over bebal ta'acher. He violates bal ta'acher. Rabbi Shimon Omer, gimo regalim kisidran. It's only if they're in order. V'chag ha-matzot chila. And what does that mean, in order? It means from Pesach. V'chein haya Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai Omer. And similarly, Rabbi Shimon Yochai used to say, now that's interesting, because Stam Rabbi Shimon in the Gemara is, or in the Mishnah is, Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai. So we just quoted Rabbi Shimon's opinion. It says, V'chein haya Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai Omer. It's the same person. We have other instances of that in Shas. But over here, what they're saying is, Rabbi Shimon also says in another Braita, that, Regalim pe'amim gimel, pe'amim dalet, pe'amim chamisha. Sometimes, in order to violate Baal Ta'acher, it'll take three regalim. Sometimes it'll take four. Sometimes it'll take five. Depends when you made the neder. If you made the neder before Pesach, then you're only going to have three regalim. If you take the neder between Pesach and Shavuot, Then you will have Shavuot, Sukkot, and then another three for the full cycle, you get five. You take the nether between Shavuot and Sukkot, then you have Sukkot, plus the three in order, you'll have four. So depending on when you take the nether, will determine how many regalim you will pass in order to violate Baal Te'acher. Ketzad. So that's what Gemara explains now. Nadar is named Pesach. If he took the nether before Pesach, Gimel. If Ne'atzeret, if he does it before Shavuot, like in the time period we're in now, Chamisha, you'll end up with five. Ne'achag, if he does it before Sukkot, you'll have Arba'ah, you'll have four. So now the Gemara is going to discuss this. Tan Rabbanan, Eva Breita, Chayavei Hadamin, Va'erachin, Va'charamin, Va'deshot, Chadot, Va'shamot, Olot, Ushlamim, Stakot, Umasrot, Bechor, Umaser, Upesach, Leket, Shechacha, Upeya. Keivan, Shabru, Alehem, Shlosha, Rigalim, Over, Bebal Te'acher. Three regalim pass on you, then you're in violation of Baal Te'acher. So some of these are easy to understand. Chayavei damin varachin, we just saw before. If you have monetary obligations to Hekdesh, then you're in violation of Baal Te'acher. Charamim, as Tosafot says, means ben charmei kohanim, ben charmei bedek abayit. It's whether you dedicated it to the kohanim or to the bedek abayit. Hekdeshot, again, it's pretty straightforward. Chatot, hashamot, olot, shlamim, those are all korbanot, that makes sense. Tzedakot is interesting. First of all, the Rabbeinu Tam says that Pasach, this is the Pasach Allah he gave, that the Tzedakah should skim the tame biyad gabai. If you give a indication to the gabai that you're going to give a certain amount of Tzedakah, yeshna b'bal tacher. You're in violation of bal tacher, milamosra the gabai. If you don't give it to the gabai, you will violate bal tacher. But if you noder ben atzmo, if you take the nether to yourself and say, I'm going to give tzedakah, then there's no violation of Baal Te'acher. Then you're not under that rubric of Baal Te'acher. It's very interesting. So if you make a commitment to the gabai, then you are under this umbrella of Baal Te'acher. If you just simply say you're going to do something, not to anybody else, but you say to yourself you're going to do it, or take a nether to yourself, there is no violation of Baal Te'acher. That's number one. Number two is, in tzedakah, 2 days daf, we're going to see that you have to give tzedakah immediately. When you promise to give tzedakah, you have to give it immediately. So what does it mean here that you have three regalim? So that is only when there are no aniyim available. You took money out to give to the aniyim, and the aniyim are not available to give it. So you don't have to chase after the aniyim. That's true for the first three regalim. But after you pass three regalim, then you're under Baal Te'acher, and then you have to chase down the aniyim and get the money paid to the aniyim. If aniyim are available, you've got to discharge your obligation immediately. If there are no anim available, we give you a man of time before you're in violation of Baal Te'acher, and that's the tzedakah that we're speaking about here in the Braita. Masrot. Masrot probably include maser and truma as well. Now, masrot also, we have a fixed time when you have to give them, that's bior masrot. Bior masrot happens in the fourth year of the cycle, as well as in the seventh year, in the Shemitah year, meaning every 3 years you have to do bior masrot in the fourth year. In the first 3 years you have masrot, the fourth year you'll do bior for those first 3 years before Pesach in the fourth year. Then you'll have 3 years after that again, fourth, fifth, and sixth year, and then in the seventh year, in the Shemitah, right before Pesach, you have another requirement of bior masrot. So what are you talking about? Three regalim. So Tosafot distinguishes between whether you've been mafrish the masrot, or if you've yet to be mafrish the masrot. If you have yet to be mafrish the masrot, bior masrot requires you to take off the masrot. If you've already been mafrish to masrot, then you're under this condition of Baal Te'acher, which is that you can't wait more than 3 regalim in order to dispense the masrot, to give them away to whoever they belong to. So that's how Tosafot explains what masrot are doing inside of this braita. Then, in addition, Bechor, Maser, Pesach, those are all understandable, those are korbanot. But next, Leket, Shechan, Peah present the problem. Leket, Shechan, Peah, you have to leave in the corner of your field. So what does that mean? You're in violation of Baal Te'acher. You have to leave them when you harvested. If you didn't harvest them, you already violated the Isra of taking them when you weren't supposed to take them. What type of Baal Te'acher is there over here? So Tosafot gives two answers. First answer is, Vim lo frish peya min hakama, mafrish min amarim, o min hakri. That there is an opportunity to rectify the fact that you didn't leave peya by giving it later in the process. So when you give it later in the process, over there there'll be violations of Baal Te'acher if you wait so long to give the peya. That's one possibility. You're not allowed to pick up the leket shechan peyah and then give it to the aniyim. If it's laying out in your field, you can't collect it and give it to a specific aniyim. You can't collect it at all. It's up to the aniyim to come and collect it. But if there are no aniyim available, Tosafot suggests that you could collect it and then distribute it to the aniyim later on. When you collect it on behalf of the aniyim, then you can be in violation of Baal Te'acher. Now, again, that will be the same differentiation that we saw before in Tzedakah, which is that if the aniyim are available, you have to distribute it right away. If the aniyim are not available, then you have the three regalim before you have to distribute it and are in violation of Baal Techer. If you don't, then you have to start finding aniyim, because you're not allowed to hold on to it for that long. So now we have the position of the Tanna Kamma, which is, Kevin Shavu Aleihem Shlosha Regalim Over B'Baal Techer. Three regalim, doesn't matter the order of them, three regalim pass, you are in violation of Baal Techer. B'Shimon Omer, we just started B'Shimon's opinion, Shlosha Regalim Kis Sidran. That should be three regalim in order, V'Chag HaMatzot Tchila, and Chag HaMatzot is the first one. Rimeir Omer, Kevin Shavar Aleihem Regal Echad Over B'Baal Techer. Rimeir says, you pass one regal, you're in violation of Baal Techer. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Omer, Kevin Shavu Aleihem Shnei Regalim Over B'Baal Techer. You need to have two regalim pass, and then you're in violation. Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon Omer, Kevin Shavar Aleihem Chag HaSukkot Over Aleihem B'Baal Techer. As soon as you pass Sukkot, doesn't matter when Sukkot is, if it's the third regal, the first regal, the second regal, as soon as you pass Sukkot, then you're in violation of Baal Te'acher. So my time of the Tanna Kamma. So Gemara wants to understand all the positions here. Why does the Tanna Kamma say any three regalim and you're in violation? Michte minayu salik. When you look in Parshat Re'eh, the pasuk says, Shalosh pe'amim b'shana yireh kol zuchuka, says that three times a year, you will go up and you will visit Hashem. V'chag hamatzot, B'chag HaShavuot, or B'chag HaSukkot. So he says, listen, you just listed out all the holidays right above this, and then you said three times a year you have to go visit. What do you think the three times a year are referring to? Obviously, they're referring to the three holidays that you just mentioned before, which was Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot. So then why is the Torah, after it tells you three times you have to go up, when is that? B'chag HaMatzot, B'chag HaSukkot, B'chag HaShavuot. It's unnecessary. It's at the end of Parshat HaMoledot. So it's obviously referencing the three holidays that were mentioned before. Why do you have to repeat them again and say, B'chag HaMatzot, B'chag HaShavuot, B'chag HaSukkot? I'm going to lead them ahead, B'chag HaMatzot, B'chag HaShavuot, B'chag HaSukkot, Shema Mina, the Baal Techer, to teach you about Baal Techer, that you have three regalim in order to be in violation of Baal Techer. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Enu Tzarich Lomar B'chag HaSukkot. You don't have to speak about Chag HaSukkot, because that's in the context in which this pasuk is written. It speaks about Chag HaPesach, then it speaks about Chag HaShavuot, then it speaks about Chag HaSukkot. In Chag HaSukkot, the pasuk comes up of Shlosh Piyamim B'Shana Yireh Kol Zurcha Et Pnei Hashem. That's found in Sukkot itself. So Sukkot is completely unnecessary. So Lama Ne'amar, why is it said there? Lomar Shezeh Acharon, to teach you that that has to be the last one. To be in violation of Baal Techer, you have to get to Sukkot, when Sukkot is the last one. And when's that? That's only if you have all three regalim in orders. It doesn't matter when you start, Sukkot has got to be the last one of the three regalim. That's how Rabbi Shimon learns. This is the girsa of Rashi. Rashi changed the girsa in the Gemara to be this way. Tosafot, on the other hand, quotes from the Rabbeinu Chananel, and the Rabbeinu Chananel's girsa, which was, Ein tzarich lomar b'chag HaMatzot. You don't have to say b'chag HaMatzot, shebo patach hakatuv tchila. Because the parsha began with Chag HaMatzot. So Chag HaMatzot is obviously included. So where does that come to teach you? That it has to be Rishonah. Now obviously Rashi changed it because it makes more sense to say that Sukkot is obvious rather than Chag HaMatzot. Just because Chag HaMatzot is the first one, why does it make it obvious that it is Chag HaMatzot? On the other hand, if you say it's in the context of Chag HaSukkot, to say Chag HaSukkot is the last one, that makes sense because you're in the context of Chag HaSukkot. Rabbi Meir, my time, Rabbi Meir says you only have to have one regga. Where does he learn that from? Dichtiv. It says in the Pasuk, Uvata Shama, Veveitim Shama. You will come up to Yerushalayim and you will bring with you your korbanot. So you know what the requirement is? You gotta bring them up. When you come up, you gotta bring your stuff with you. The Rabbanan meaning the other opinions here, like the Tanna Kamma and Rabbi Shimon, what do they say about that? How will they say? That is a positive commandment. So what will turn out interestingly enough is that at the first regal they agree, the chatchila, you should bring it. That's the mitzvah to say. Bidyabad, if you didn't bring it in the first regal, then you have whatever time period they set based on Baal Techer. So there are two separate things. There's a din of a positive command, which is the chatchila, and then there's a negative command, which tells you that if you don't do it, you're only in violation after you either three regalim according to the Tanna Kamma or three regalim in order according to Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Meir came into Amar Le Rachmana Aiti, says, since the Torah tells you to bring it, v'lo Aiti, in the end you didn't bring it, memela kam le Baal Techer, then obviously you're in violation of Baal Techer. The Torah tells you what you're supposed to do, then if you don't do it, then obviously you've done what's wrong, and it's Baal Techer. So he sees that the two are correlated, that the positive and negative commandment have to be one and the same. So therefore, if you're demanded to bring it up in the first regal, you're also in violation if you don't bring it up then. Chachamim see them as being two separate dinim. One's the chatchila, one is bidi avad. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, my time, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says that you have two regalim. Where does he get that from? Dichtiv. Elu tasu l'shem b'moadeichem. It says in Parshat Pinchas, these are the korbanot that you bring b'moadeichem. Moadeichem, mi'ut moadim mishnayim. Moadim is two. Now, even though in Parshat Pinchas, it says, talking about korbanot chova, it's talking about the musafim. These aren't korbanot nidarim or nidava that you have to bring up, which Baal Techer applies to. So the truth is that it says, in the psukim, they're levad mimi nidreichem. Besides what you have to bring up. Yes, that's referencing to the korbanot chova, but it says the korbanot chova is besides what you have to bring up from your nidarim and nidavot. Find that the din applies equally to them, and that two moadim is the appropriate time. Rabbanon, what do they do with that pasuk? How look at Rabbi Yona? Damer Rabbi Yona, ukshu kol amoadim kol amzeleze. That all the moadim are connected. That's what the pasuk of Eilu tasu l'shem b'moadeichem comes to teach you, that all the moadim are the same, that shukulam mechaprim atumat nikdash ukdashav. By Rosh Chodesh, over there, it says that the Musaf of Rosh Chodesh has a specific purpose, which is the Seit et Avon Aida, carry the burden or the sin of the Aida. What you learn is the Tumat Migdash Ukdashav, that is, if you eat Kodashim with Tumat Aguf, or you enter the Migdash while you have Tumat Aguf. So that's what it's Mechaper for. How do I know that all the other Korbanot Musaf and the Moadim are Mechaper for the same thing? That you learn out of the pasuk of Elu Tasu L'Hashem Moadeichem. Just like on Rosh Chodesh, that's the purpose of the Musaf, so too on all the other Moadim, that's the purpose of the Musafim. Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, my time. What's the reasoning behind Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon that says that as soon as you cross over Sukkot, you're in violation? The Tanya. Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon Omer. Lo yomar chaga Sukkot, shibor diber hakatuv. Why should it mention chaga Sukkot? That's the context in which it's written. So lama ne'amar, why was it written? Lomar shizeg goreim. So that is the trigger. The trigger is Chag HaSukkot, that once you pass Chag HaSukkot, then you're in violation. So you don't understand why they had a different girsa up above by the position of Rabbi Shimon, because over here, that is the position of his son, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon. Rashi makes it the same limud, but they just learn it differently. Rabbi Shimon learns that Chag HaSukkot has to be at the end, and his son learns that Chag HaSukkot is the only trigger based on that. Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, Hai b'chag ha-matzot, b'chag ha-shavot, b'chag ha-zukot, ma darshubei. Rabbi Meir, who learns it out of the assay of Ovat Hashem v'etim Shama. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, who learns it out of the fact that it says, Elu tashud Hashem b'moadeichem. So what do they do with chag ha-matzot, b'chag ha-shavot, b'chag ha-zukot, which are extraneous? Ma darshubei, mi bailu lik Rabbi Elazar, amar Rabbi Oshayo. They need it for this limud. Amar Rabbi Elazar, Amar Rabbi Shayu, minayin latzeret sheish la tashkumim kol shiva. How do you know that Shavuot has makeup for its chagiga? If you didn't bring it on Shavuot itself, then you can bring it in the 7 days. Tamalomar b'chaga matzot, u'b'chaga Shavuot, u'b'chaga Sukkot. Mekish chaga Shavuot, u'chaga matzot. It is a hekish. There's a parallel between Shavuot and chaga matzot and Pesach. Ma chaga matzot yesh lo tashkumim kol shiva, just like by chaga matzot. You can bring your chagigah. If you don't bring it on the first day, you can bring it all of the remaining 6 days of Pesach. Av chag ha-shavuot, yesh la tashlumim kol shiva. If you don't bring it on Shavuot itself, you can bring it for the subsequent 6 days as tashlumim. Rashi says, v'lekesh l'chag ha-sukkot. So why don't you say there's a hekesh l'chag ha-sukkot there? They're all three of them in the pasuk, and chag ha-shavuot sits between Pesach and Sukkot. If you do that, malal and shmona, by Sukkot, you have 8 days. Av kan shmona. So too over here, you have 8 days by Shavuot. You should have 7 extra days after Shavuot, meaning a total of 8 days to bring your Chagigah. Shmini regel bifnei atzmo. What do you mean? Shmini Atzeret is a separate holiday. It's not part of Sukkot. Sukkot is 7 days, and then you have Shmini Atzeret, which is his own day. How you can't do the mid-eight? Smart says, Imur darminan shmini regel bifnei atzmo, linyan pazer kashev. That the only way that we say Shmini is regel bifnei atzmo is for these 6 items. Which are hinted to through the acronym Pazer Kashev. We'll come back and discuss them. Of all the Inyan Tashlumim, Divriakol Tashlumim Dirishonu. Everybody agrees that in terms of makeup, the 8th day is a makeup for the first day as well. So the first 7 days and the 8th day can be used to bring the Korban Chagigah, your obligation to discharge the Korban Chagigah. Tznan, Mishlo Chag Yom Tov Rishon Shel Chag, Chogeg Et Kol HaRegel V'Yom Tov Achron Shel Chag. Whoever didn't bring the Chagigah on the Yom Tov Rishon, is allowed to bring his chagigah on the rego, and even on Yom Tov Achron Shel Chag, and even on Shmini Atzeret. So you see that 8 days are good for Tashlumim, means first day plus 7 are good. Why don't you say the same thing by Shavuot? It says, Tafasta Meruba lo Tafasta, Tafasta Muat Tafasta. You have a choice over here. You have a choice to make it parallel to Chag HaPesach,
Make a parallel to Chag Sukkot. Pesach says 7 days of Chagigah. Sukkot says 8 days of Chagigah. Now I have to make my decision. Which one am I going to pick? I'm going to pick the lesser of the two because that's the least chiddush. If I pick 7, I for sure got 7. Even 8 would include 7. If I pick 8, I risk that I got it the wrong way and it's not right because I should have done 7 and now I'm doing 8. Whenever we have a chiddush or you have a limud, we're going to take the least chiddush. What's the least chiddush? Over here to take 7 instead of 8. Now, what is this Pazer Kashav that are differentiated between Shmini Atzeret and Chag HaSukkot? So as Rashi points out, I already explained this to you in Sukkah and in Yoma. We've done this a number of times before, but nevertheless, he explains it again, which is Pious. Pay is Pious, is they have a separate lottery for the Korbanot on Shmini Atzeret. They're not part of the cycle on Sukkot, where the Mishmarot all work together, go through a rotation of who gets the Karbanei Musaf. On Shmini Atzeret, they have a separate Pious for all the Mishmarot to be a part of to see who does the Avodah. That's one. What about Zayin? Zayin and Reish are Zman and Regel. Zman and Regel is Latzmo, Shein Shem Chag HaSukkot Alav. Does not have the Shem HaSukkot on it. Therefore, Zman, it gets its own Shefianu. And Regel means that it gets its own terminology. That means in benching and in davening, you're going to mention Shmini Atzeret as Shmini Atzeret and not as Chag HaSukkot. Korban. It has its own korban, shein korbanot, kashar yemei achag. The korbanei musaf of Shmini Atzeret are different than the korbanei musaf of Sukkot. On Sukkot you have 14 kvasim, 2 elim, and then you have the parim going down. On Shmini Atzeret you have 1 par, 1 ayo, and 7 basim, and that's it. It's not part of that mineral series of korbanot. Shir, it has its own shir. Rashi over here says that the shir in the Mikdash was not the shir of Sukkot, but its own shir, Shmini Atzeret. What it is, we don't know. Although in Masechet Sofrim, it says in Shul, they used to say in Shmini Atzeret, Lam Natzeach HaLashminit. So that's possible, as Tosafot says, that maybe that would be in the Mikdash. That's what they sang on Shmini Atzeret. And the last thing is Bet, Bracha. Bracha Liatzmo is that they used to give a bracha to the king on Shmini Atzeret. Similar to what happened by Shlomo Melech in the consecration of the Mikdash. When they consecrated the Mikdash, then on the last day, they give Shlomo Melech a bracha and then they go home. So over here, they give a bracha, the melech, before they go home, zecher to chanukata bayit, zecher to the establishment or the chanukata beit HaMikdash. That's the way Rashi explains it. Tosafot takes issue with this. It's perek lulavu avarava in mashmakah. Rashi says, doesn't sound like what it means in the Gemara in Sukkah. And therefore it says, mesik my bracha. What is bracha? Birkata mazon v'tfilah. So he says, the bracha is not like Rashi says, it's Birkat HaMelech, but rather bracha is the issue of Birkat HaMazon and Tefillah, that you change over Shmini Atzeret. Well, if that's the case, then what does Regel B'fnei Atzmo mean? So Regel B'fnei Atzmo, Tosafot says, is that Shita'un Lina. That it's a Regel B'fnei Atzmo that requires you to sleep over. You can't just come, you have to stay over afterwards. Venu Chanano Perish L'inyan Avelut. That's a Regel B'fnei Atzmo for Avelut. That is, if Chas V'Shalom, someone has a niftar that they're chayab to mid-mital belalem that passes away prior to Sukkot, right before Sukkot, then when they reach Sukkot, that cuts off the Shiva. The 7 days of Sukkot then count as another 7 days towards his Shloshim. The cutoff of Elut is 7 days. That's the Shiva. Another 7 days for Sukkot. And then Shmini Atzeret counts as an additional 7 days because it's a regular B'fnei Atzmo. So by the time he exits Sukkot, he's already done 21 days of his Shloshim. So that's what the Rabbeinu Chananel says, it's a regular B'fnei Atzmo, is B'linyan Avelut. And then he says, Rabbeinu Tami, but Ma'arib Shalo, the special tefillot that they used to add into davening. We have a very fixed davening today, and nobody says any of these extras. Probably 20, 30 years ago, it was much more common. They have the Pizmonim that they used to say for all the holidays, in the middle of Birkot Kriyat Shema, so on and so forth. So Rabbi Beinu Tams, Ramish Lo Kodesh Lelina Ushloshim Yidachem, Kasher Avelim Yinachem. He writes in his that it is Kodesh for Lina, which is Rego, plus he has Rabbeinu Chananel's thing, which as well is that Shloshim Yidachem. It affects the Shloshim. But it's not really that it's Dochel the Gamrei, it just eats up another 7 days. Shear. What's the shear? Rabbeinu Tam says that the shear on Shmini Atzeret is different than the shear on Sukkot. On Sukkot, all the shear ayom are a half perek of Tehillim. Every day we say a half perek of Tehillim, not the full perek. On Shmini Atzeret, you say the full perek of Tehillim, not a half perek of Tehillim. And again, he quotes like Rashi, Masechet Sofrim, that was L'metzeach al Shminit, and possibly that was what they said in the Mikdash. Okay, with that we'll stop, and we'll continue with what we learned out of the Hekesh between the three Regalim tomorrow.